Hello and welcome to Front End Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Ports, I'm with you on a sunny, warm Wednesday afternoon. Allison Lucan is here.
Hello.
Allison, is the air conditioning on yet?
You know, it kicked in yesterday for the first time. It's kind of an exciting, but also I'm a windows open girl, so it was a little disappointing.
Yeah, ours is not on. And there's reason for that. We don't have a furnace right now.
Oof, that's not good.
I could do a whole separate HVAC podcast right now, by the way, if anyone would listen. Nobody would.
No.
My wife's tired of listening. She's like, next, back to Dak, whatever his name is. Blue Jackets, well, they're well into the offseason now, Allison, but there are so many storylines to this offseason, and we're going to hit a couple of them. We're going to start with the goaltenders. We're going to get into Seth Jones's contract and all of the ins and outs of it and what we would pay, what the value is if not keeping him. Jarmo Kekalainen's willingness, as stated earlier this week, to carry him into the season, even if a contract extension is not signed. So lots to get to, even though it is the offseason. Let's get first to this because it's the warmest. We wrote a story posted yesterday about the goaltenders, Jonas Korpisalo, Elvis Merzlikins. We've gone on about this ourselves. Goaltending is so unique within this sport, within several sports, that you almost have to talk to goaltending experts to get a feel for the position. And interestingly enough, that's what Jarmo Kekalainen is going to do this summer when it is time to trade a goaltender. He's probably already had that conversation. Of course he has, with his goaltending coach, Manny Legacy, with the goaltending former goaltender, great goaltender, Nicklas Backstrom, who's been working for the club for a couple of years now, does some scouting, does some advising, also does some coaching of the guys in Europe. So he's going to rely on those guys. We called four or five NHL, former NHL goalies, and talk to them about Korpisalo and Merzlikins, and what did they see, and who would they trade? And a lot of them were they tried to be on both sides of the fence. Nobody wanted to say for sure who they'd trade. But I think they broke it down pretty similarly to how we did, how we have. And then we did a poll, Allison, asking people, who would you trade if you had to, Korpisalo or Merzlikins? And it was basically 3-1, people would trade Korpisalo and keep Elvis Merzlikins. It was 74-26%. That's what's called a landslide in politics. Your thoughts, Allison, on just what the commentators had to say. Check it out. It's on the site if you want to read what they had to say, and also where the public is in terms of which goalie to move.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the piece was excellent. Huge kudos to you. I thought that was really, really, really good. You know, it's interesting to me, I'm a big fan of Jonas Korpisalo. He has evolved his game. He plays well. He's a great guy. But it's interesting to me, and I liked how you parsed this out too. There's things to think about with his game, and then there's things to think about away from what happens on the ice. And it continues to blow my mind. And I wouldn't presume to know what went behind all the votes of your poll, but it continues to blow my mind how, and again, we're talking about what it seems everyone agrees is a good goaltender in Elvis with a good ceiling. And we have all these concerns about a guy who enjoys the game. Kevin Weeks put it quite succinctly that it needed to change the old white hockey men culture. And I'm paraphrasing his words, but this just confounds me that the biggest concern that people seem to have is his quote unquote attitude or whatever you want to call it. And it blows my mind that we are at this point in the world and in sport, to hear that is still a fight in the culture. But, listen, again, what a luxury to have what is two good goaltenders. And again, I think your piece really illuminated that. It just depends on what basis will Jarmo Kekalainen make his decision.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. It was an interesting allowance anyways from Jarmo that if the difference in the market, in other words, if the difference in what the market will will return for Korpisalo versus Merzlikins is wider than the difference they feel between the two goalies' abilities, then they might let the market decide which one they keep. I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it, and I wonder what you think of that idea of what do you think of that thought process?
I mean, I get it. I respect what he's saying in theory. Again, and I feel horrible because I have a ton of respect for Korpisalo and what he can do and has done. But I feel like the gap is wider. And I think that, as we keep saying, what is the plan for this team? Because if the plan for this team is that Seth Jones is staying and they're going to reload and continue to push to be a contender, you want the stronger goaltender, period, end of story. Goaltending is such a huge piece. So I get it, but to me, I feel like you do kind of have to, you have to know who you really do want to keep at the end of the day.
Yeah. What if you grade both of them pretty similarly? Like, that's something I keep coming back to. Manny Legacy's not going to go on record until the trade is made of saying which goaltender he prefers. He may not say it then. The Blue Jackets aren't going to say publicly which player they think is the better goalie. What if they think it's apples and apples? What if they think that they're pretty either different, but even, if that makes any sense, that's possible to me.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. But I feel like even the feedback we heard in your piece, we're not talking a matter of a hair's width of difference here in both on ice and off ice, to be very honest. And so I think that's why it's hard for me to envision that is the scenario here.
So you've said it a couple times, and I haven't, but I hope it comes through in our coverage of it and the way we've spoken of him previously. You can't help but like Jonas Korpisalo. He's a wonderful person. He's done everything right here. And so none of this is personal, any of it. You're not picking which player you like best, which personality you like best. Sorry, you're picking which player you like best. And it's more than just the play. It's the attitude of the player. It's how the team plays around the goalie. I think you should take in, if you're the Blue Jackets right now, you should take in a markability into effect with all of this. But I'm trying to find the right word for sympathy, because I don't want to feel sorry for Jonas Korpisalo in any way, because he certainly doesn't need our pity. And I don't mean it that way. But I feel for him a bit because, and this is pro sports, it's dog eat dog. It's the best move on, the rest don't. But he waited his turn behind Bobrovsky. He finally gets his turn to be the starter. And now here comes this shiny toy that people have been anticipating for how long. And Elvis is Mr. Personality. I don't think anybody can deny that. And of course, this kid is extremely popular, Merzlikins. He plays up to the crowd. He's got the great name. He's funnier than hell and genuine in his post-game meetings, his interviews with Shelley on the bench. Every time he does TV, there's something great and funny or hilarious in there. Is there a part of you, Allison, that's like, God, you know, like if you put yourself in Korpisalo's shoes or skates, however you want to put it, you kind of feel for him a little bit that here's this new kid in school that you were the guy that everybody liked. Now here comes this new kid, and this guy's getting all the freaking attention. Do you feel for him at all in that respect?
You know, I appreciate your point there, because I've been now churning on what word ever since you started. But I think what I feel more is that perhaps, and this word isn't even the right word, but I feel like he deserves more appreciation both for his game and what he's done as an individual. And honestly, I think this stems in part because it's really hard for people to understand goaltending if they don't dig into the position, if they haven't played the position, in my opinion. I don't think we give it enough due because we don't really understand it. And I'm speaking for myself, but I think it's that because we, you know, you can look at 12 forwards and say, these three are very good. And I think because there's only two and because we don't understand the intricacies of the position, maybe we don't show enough validation or respect for what the player truly is.
Yeah. And that's tough. I mean, in one light, I would love for people to give me $2.8 million a year and not give me my full credit, I guess. Like, there are certainly worse lots in life. But I think that in itself was a snub for Korpisalo last year, where, again, you've been here, you had a pretty good, you were an all-star last year, and your contract extension is 2 years with a $2.8 million cap hit. And here's the new kid on the block who has a pretty good 2 month run. And his deal is 2 years, $4 million. It's you're making 70% of what he's making. Really? Like, that's kind of a snub in and of itself, but the numbers are what the numbers are. To those numbers, Allison, do you think Elvis's larger payday, and we should look at hard dollars too, because I think Elvis is making $5 million this coming season, and cap hit's still $4 million, but I think he's making $5 million in cash. And I want to say that Korpisalo is making $3.4 million this coming season. How much of the finances do you read into this as likely to be traded? In other words, does Columbus want to trade Merzlikins and his $5 million salary? Or are they more inclined to trade? Will it be easier to move Korpisalo because he's cheaper and teams? There's going to be some cash-strapped and cap-strapped teams. Might be easier to fit Korpisalo and his $2.8 million under their cap.
Yeah, I mean, there's two answers there, in my opinion. The first is, yes, Korpisalo is probably the easier to move. However, it again, the refrain of the summer, right? How much money does Seth Jones need? And do you have it? And, you know, will they need that little wiggle room that maybe moving Elvis could provide? I tend to think that when it comes to money, however, that in this cap strap market, that the lower cap hit is going to be the more attractive piece of all that when it comes to who they're going to move, and that teams are going to be more interested in Korpisalo for that reason.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting. So if you're Yarmo, you're looking at it in terms of the return. Would I rather have Korpisalo and what Elvis can return to me? Or would I rather have Elvis and what Korpisalo can return to me? And how does one offset the other? I'm not sure. I think it's highly unlikely either of these goalies by themselves brings back a quote unquote number one center. That's not going to happen. But I get the sense that in order for a top six forward to come back in a trade that involves Korpisalo, there's going to have to be something else in that trade from Columbus. I think the return's going to be better from Elvis because people believe they're getting a better goalie. There's also three young, bright, not young, three still in their 20s, pretty good goaltenders hitting the market this year. So it's going to be crowded again, and I don't know that it's going to be a great market to trade in again. So Jarmo Kekalainen may not get the return that he's looking for, but I think he's got to move. He's got to move and move it pretty quickly because they can't just let a guy leave for free. Any thoughts on that? Did I say anything of interest there?
Everything you say is of interest, Aaron, of course.
Thank you.
But no, I agree. I think that whichever goaltender moves is a piece of the puzzle. And as we've talked about with numerous other players, they have to squeeze every bit of value they can out of what they have. And that means trading one of these two this year. I think it's the right thing to do. And I think it's the fair thing, honestly, to do to both of these players involved.
Yeah, because they both want to be starters.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Speaking of UFAs and next year, Seth Jones, Allison.
I've heard of him. This is
a big topic, and there's a lot of different offshoots to it. How much is too much? How much is it worth to let him walk? And what's the value there? In other words, how much is he to you? I think that's a question that needs to be asked more than just necessarily relating him to what the rest of the market is. How much does he mean to you? And I think that's the way to look at it. And if you're the Blue Jackets, I don't think this is where you penny pinch $1 million here or there. I think this is a guy you've got to get done. What are your thoughts on it? Where does it start with you in dollar terms with Seth Jones?
Yeah, I'm so bad at this. I'm so bad at the actual dollar amounts, but it has to be high. And it has to be high because his last contract was extremely organizationally friendly. Yes. And as we have talked about, and as you just mentioned, his value to this franchise and the perception of this franchise, whether that's right or wrong, of him staying or going, is going to command a price. It just is. And, you know, the highest paid defenseman in the league, that's flirting with some things, but in the top tier of defensemen being paid, yes, that's where I put him right now for sure.
Okay, so let's look at this. Their top paid defenseman in the league, Erik Karlsson, $11.5 million cap hit. Number two, Drew Doughty, $11 million cap hit. Then it drops to Roman Josi, $9 million, a little over $9 million. PK Subban, $9 million. Alex Petrangelo, 8.8. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, 8.25. And this is the one, if you're a GM, that just pisses you off. Thomas Chabot in Ottawa, making $8 million. That's fine. I don't begrudge the man his money. He got $8 million coming out of his entry level deal on a long term deal. They just skipped. Ottawa just skipped the second contract altogether. And there go the prices. Thanks, guys. Jacob Trouba is making $8 million in New York. He had 2 goals this year, Allison. Brent Burns, $8 million. John Carlson, $8 million. So the top 10 paid defensemen in the league are all making $8 million a year. We know how this works with these long-term contracts. At first, the first year is a little bit higher than maybe people would expect, because by the end of it, it settles back down into the sort of midstream of the market. I've been saying for a while, if the top two guys are making $11 million and Yossi's making $9 million, I don't think it's crazy that Seth Jones is tap dancing between $9 and $10 million.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely the range. And it you know, again, I would have to dig into this more, but it feels right. That feels like the right increase for, as you said, where this player is in his career, the kind of contracts these guys get. And you know, when you this year too, I think so many people are going to argue on both sides, the front office and the team, it was a fluky year because of COVID, because of all these crazy variables. So even like you were saying, some of these stats, I throw them out for this past year. But yeah. Nine and a half, ten, these are the numbers we're talking about here for sure.
I mean, he was on pace for another 40-point season. So here's the thing with him, the one thing that if I'm a Blue Jackets fan or if I'm Jones's camp, the one thing I'm looking for here in this negotiation is this can't be an arbitration hearing. I think I've said this before. It can't be, you know, here's where he is points-wise. Here are his shortcomings as a player. Don't give me that. I'm a UFA next year. If you want to point out all my shortcomings, and not pay me. That's fine. He's going to get $9 million somewhere next year. There's no question. Is there any question in your mind if he hit the free agent market this year, he'd hit $9 million?
No question. None at all.
There's no question. And that the new suitors, when he hits the market, are they going to say, well, COVID takes about 15% off the cap here. So the new $9 million is now 7.6 or whatever that would be. No. You're making $9 million a year. And right now he's the 47th highest paid defenseman in the league. That's a joke. He's tied for 46 with Rasmus Ristolainen. He was on pace for another 40-point season. But Seth Jones, and you've talked about this, Allison, this is not a defenseman that you – the reason he doesn't win the Norris is because he doesn't put up the Letang, the Carlson, those numbers. He doesn't hang those numbers. But you can't measure his play simply by his offensive prowess. Fair?
1,000,000%. And, you know, John Tortorella always used to say, too, and I wrote on this years ago, if you want to give a most offensive defenseman award, please, by all means, because there certainly is value in that, 100%. But the Norris is supposed to be the best defenseman. And is Seth Jones one of the best defensemen? I say yes. And in fact, I argue, you know, we've talked about this. I argue this with my analytical colleagues all the time. I don't know that the numbers accurately capture what Seth Jones does, because I see what he does. I'm becoming that person. Yes, I'm owning it. I see what he does. I see what the numbers say, even the quote unquote underlying numbers. And I've talked to some people in the analytical community who agree that we're missing something with these numbers right now. He is so valuable.
So illuminate that for me, if you can. What do the numbers say, Allison? And if the numbers are everything, how are there players where we can say, yeah, but? And I know there have been examples through the years, but what are we talking about here with him? Because, you know, analytics do play a big part when it comes to contract time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is the interesting thing is that, and you've heard me, I have asked coaches this, I have asked players this for every year that I've had the opportunity to cover the league and the Blue Jackets, is how do you measure defense? How do you measure preventing something, right? I mean, how do you do that? It's a conundrum. And so we're falling back, particularly for defense. We're looking at what did or did not your opponent create. And we're looking at what did your team create when you were on the ice. Now, listen, at the end of the day, I agree. I believe in the methodology behind this thought process. But there's something missing, you know, and one of the theories even that I've talked to a colleague about is it the insane minutes that Seth plays? Is that doing something to what the math does? And again, listen, I'm not going to sit here and disrespect the people who've done tremendous work in the analytical space. But pretty much everyone agrees, and I've said my holy grail is we cannot accurately measure defense yet. So we're measuring things to supplant that, and we haven't yet found the answer for a player like Seth Jones.
Yeah, and I think these guys who are always out against the best players, always. That there are ways to measure that, of course, but that has to be taken into effect.
If you're
always on the ice,
it is,
against
though.
The best players.
Yeah, it is. And you know, and again, yeah. This is, I want to respect the work of these minds in the analytical space that is taken into account. But there's something to, you know, and I it was one of the last games and Seth did it and I put out a clip of it. Seth Jones could play like Zach Werenski, but Seth Jones, at least in his talking to me and when I watch him, Seth Jones takes a role to allow Zach Werenski to be Zach Werenski and focuses on being something a little different, which is necessary and valuable and makes his team successful more nights than not. But sometimes we see him say, screw it. And he takes the puck on his stick and he, you know, goes deep in the zone and skates the net and often scores a goal. And so there's some interplay there with who he is as a player versus what he's actually doing on the ice, if that makes sense. That may also come into play because the numbers do. And again, this is why it's so crazy. The numbers do all the things that our common sense would say, well, have you thought about this? And they have. They really have. But the bigger caveat is all of this work right now is based on publicly available data, and it's still very, very valuable. But again, it means we still have so much room to grow. And it's crazy. Seth Jones is, for me, the conundrum of the analytical world right now.
Interesting. So for me, these are the two arguments if you're the Blue Jackets. He's not an $11 million guy to a lot of people because he doesn't have I agree with you that he could do more offensively if he were to give up or cheat a little bit more defensively. But I don't think he has the sort of high-end, polished, elite skills offensively that some other defensemen do. Brent Burns, although Brent Burns, that's not a great example. Some of these guys are just reckless. Carlson and Burns, I think they drive their teammates crazy because they'll leave the barn door open all day if they think they can score. Jones doesn't play that way. But I guess what I'm saying by the polished offensive, he doesn't have the beautiful, overwhelming one-timer. He misses a lot of one-timers. He doesn't have the great – I don't know that he's a great power play guy particularly. And that may be one thing that's bringing them down. But I think he's pretty good with the chance to be really good at either of those. It's in there. It just needs to be refined. But for me, what is the cost of the Blue Jackets not having him? And to me, that's not worth quibbling over $1 million. And it's easy to say when it's somebody else's millions, but if this is a guy that needs 9.5 and you're only willing to go to 8.5, for me, the deal's done. You get him at 9.5. And I'd rather have him than maybe you're just not signing a forward you want at $1 million. Deal. Like that's perfectly fine for me. This is a kid you need to keep. This is a guy, this is your next captain. This is the foundation of your team. Elvis may end up being this team's poster child. Seth Jones is your new foundation. And I'm not sure Foligno's coming back. I'm not sure where it goes with the quote-unquote leadership group. Seth Jones, if he's willing to stay here, is your new foundation. I think you put the money on the table for that. And I think if you lose that, if you lose him, you're going to spend years looking for a number one defenseman. And unless you draft him, you're probably going to play $9.5-10 million a year for him in a couple years anyways. This is your guy. You know your guy. You sign him. It also puts to rest, if only temporarily, this idea that the best players don't want to stay in Columbus if they don't have to. And I'm not sure what the price is for that, but it's astronomical at this point. They have to stop that. Thoughts, Allison?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would go one step further and say, if the difference is $1 million, you pay the $1 million because that's the return you get when this team gets back into the playoffs. That's the return you get when marketing Seth Jones puts butts in the seats in Nationwide Arena. And it's that secondary dollar, that tertiary dollar, that having Seth Jones on your team is essential to consider in addition to every single reason that you just stated.
Could you hear me typing tertiary in Google just now?
Oh, come on. I know you know what that word means.
It's a great word. It's a $100 word. Good on you.
Thank you.
Allison, what else do we need to get to? I think we just made Seth Jones some money.
Listen, I don't mind that. I have always been someone that you pay for what something is worth. And in this case, there's worth on the ice. There's some intangible worth. And there's some reputational organizational worth. And I think they all factor in, and the numbers we're throwing around are fair.
Yep. Yeah. So. All right. There you have it. Anything else we need to get to?
We'll be opening our agency next month, and we will happily lower our commission compared to those in the NHL. Just kidding.
Totally. Any deal over $10 million is only 2%.
We're here for you.
Any deal under $10 million is 1.5%.
There it is.
Whatever.
Perfect.
Yeah. Paid annually. Allison, thanks for your time as always.
Thank you as always.
And thanks for your ears, people. We appreciate you listening. Keep checking us out. Stories are going to keep flowing on the site. June 2nd is the lottery. Blue Jackets will pick fifth. Will be fifth in the lottery. Don't know where they'll pick yet. They will be number 5 in the lottery on June 2nd. So that's a big deal coming up for the Blue Jackets, just a couple weeks away. Thanks for listening, and we will be back with you next week. Talk to you then.